Okay, so next up is Oliver, who's going to give you a quick show how to probe your network with Jerry and MPLS packets. Please welcome him.
Yeah, welcome everyone. My name is Oliver Herms. I'm going to talk about probing a network with GRE and MPLS packets. Here's a short agenda. I will shortly introduce myself, show you a problem statement that I was working on, speak a bit about white box and black box monitoring, show you software that helps you to probe your network, talk about our experiences, operational conclusions, and later on we have time for questions. So as I said, my name is Oliver Herms. I'm also known as TACT. I'm a senior network engineer in the Exaring AG, working in Munich. I'm a friend of robustness, reliability, and velocity in software, a network automation enthusiast, and a Golang and gRPC fanboy, to be honest. The problem we're going to talk about is the problem of knowing that your network is actually working. So let me ask a question to the audience. Who of you is using tools like SmokePing or anything like that and is actively probing if the network is really transmitting packets? That's quite a few hands, but not all. Who is probing the network links with more than 100 PPS? No one. Oh, one. I see two hands. Three. Okay, three out of 250 attendees are probing it with 100 PPS or more. If you are measuring on the production traffic, if it arrives and you get a statistic, that's satisfying, yes. the question is, how do you actually know if your network works and if you're meeting your service level objectives? The SLIs for this would be like, how many packets are you actually dropping? What's the latency on certain spans of your network? And what is the jitter that you actually have on the network? How do you know what you have? How well are you doing? Do you still have budget for migrations with downtimes? Or is there no error budget left? Is everything burned already? So on the one hand, there's white box monitoring, and you can check all your metrics on all your devices, like error counters, drop counters, packet counters in general, and you have an idea if the box is doing well or not. At least that's what it tells you if it's doing this. But you don't have an idea about services that you use, if they actually work. So equipment that's not under your control, like you buy an L2 VPN, L3 VPN, wavelength service or whatnot, you have no idea how well that one's actually performing, and you don't have the counters. Maybe your vendor that you're buying from has the counters, but probably they won't tell you. Also, you don't have an idea about hidden packet drops. Who has experienced packet drops in routers that were not being exposed in counters, like error counters or queue drop counters? There's quite a few hands here. If you don't black box probe your network, you have no idea if you're dropping packets silently on routers. Also, looking at counters on routers doesn't give you an idea about your latency. The router may take several hundreds of milliseconds to forward a packet, and you have no idea that is actually the case. In convergence events, you have no idea how quickly your network is self-healing itself, actually. Hello? Is this hanging? Well, the mouse is working, but the cursor is not. But apparently I can click, okay. Straight to black box monitoring then. So black box monitoring means actively sending test data through your network and make measurements to see if it actually works. Actively probing allows you to get an idea about end-to-end performance. So what is the packet loss from a point A to a point B? What is the latency? What is the jitter? The more packets you send through your network, the better you get an idea how well your network is doing. If you probe with a too low rate, you might miss microbursts that you have on your network, and routers are actually dropping packets, and your black box monitoring system is not seeing this because you probe like one packet a second, and if you have microbursts of, let's say, a few milliseconds, you're dropping in that time window, you won't see it. But if you probe with a too high packet rate, you have a resource exhaustion on a network or on the probing host. And that's also not what you want, because you want to use your network with production traffic and not just with probing traffic, obviously. Bandwidth is mostly not a problem within data center networks or within backbone networks. Bandwidths are big enough. You can easily spend a few megabits for probing a network. That's not too much of an issue. But CPUs are a problem on the host machines that have to send out the probing packets and also on the devices that are receiving the packets. Of course, you would not like to test a connection of a few megabits, like a DSL line or something, with multiple megabits of testing traffic, just to see if the DSL line is working. So black box monitoring, who's sending what packet where? There's several options that you actually have. You have option A, you can send packets between control planes. So you take one router, send from routing engine there to routing engine on another router. You could do that, but the CPU is actually too valuable to use it for black box testing of your network. You can do it with a few PPS, but not with more, because the CPU is just very limited. Option B, you could use some host machine and send packets to another host machine on your network, but there's a problem with that. You're testing the machines now as well, and they're probably not under your control, because many organizations, there's multiple teams that work on different parts. There's a network team that works on a network, and there's an administrator team that works on the host machines. Probably the host machine guys don't want to have you on their machines, and you have no control what they do with the machines. And then, I don't know, they push backups in the middle of the night. They congest the network interface card of the machine, and you're dropping the packets. You get a false positive alert. That's not what you want. So option C might be a better option. You deploy dedicated hosts just everywhere on every damn network device that you have. You plug in a dedicated machine that receives your probing packets and sends them back. It's not a problem if you have a cache cow, but actually, I guess nobody has, so nobody does that. Option D is what I'm proposing here. You have a dedicated host or a limited set of dedicated hosts on the network that actively sends packets to the network itself, so just to routers and switches. How does that work? Let's say you have this network. You have routers R1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and you have a machine, a monitoring machine on the right-hand side that is dual-homed. And actually, what you want to know is if every damn circuit in this network is actually working. So let's say you have this topology. Let's say R3 and R4, for example, are external externally facing routers, they have peerings on. The link between R3 and R4 would actually never be used if the traffic comes from the right-hand side. It would be multipathed to R3 or R4, and traffic would not take the R3 R4 path because it's not the shortest path. So you would have no traffic there, just your IGP, a few packets per second maybe, and that's not giving you a great idea if the link is working at all. So if you have like let's say you have CRC errors, one in 100,000, the counter would increase very, very slowly without having testing packets there. So how do you make sure that packets actually go all the way around and they traverse any path that you have? Because that's what you actually want to know, because in your failover condition, the last thing you want is that your failover path is actually not working. You can use GRE stacking. Imagine the host M on the right-hand side is sending out packets with lots of GRE and IP headers along the path, and every router on the path is configured to decapsulate GRE packets and forward the inner part. This way, you could just say, okay, I want to probe the path R1, R3, R4, R5, and then back on the shortest path to the machine M by stacking this thingy there on the right-hand side. So if the first IP header that points to R1 is a GRE header in, says protocol 47, there's another IP header that points to R3, then it points to R4, R5, and so on. And then the final packet is just an IP packet with a UDP packet in, datagram in. And within that datagram, there's just a sequence number and a timestamp. So I wrote a software for that, and I called it Matryoshka Prober, because you stick stuff into each other, packets into each other, and send them around the network. It's on GitHub. You can download it. It's a prober that sends IP and GRE packets to routers. That's what it's designed for, and the routers decapitate the packet, and the inner IP header, the last IP that points back to the probing machine. That's the idea. And I said the UDP packet contains a sequence number and the timestamp of when exactly this probe was being sent. So you can easily derive what the round trip time exactly was, and the timestamp is in nanoseconds. So the Matryoshka prober, what does it actually do? The source IP addresses of the packets that are being sent out, they can be spoofed in IP subnets that can be defined. And by default, it spoofs the source IP on every IP packet in the stack within the range of 169.245.0.0/16. Why does it do that? If you have LACP links or ECMP paths, you want to make sure that all paths are actually being used. Every single cable, every single optic is to be used. And usually routers are hashing the IP header and making a decision based on the hash which of the N paths is to be used. And by just iterating over a large IP block in the source field, which we don't need because we only forward to destination and destination and destination, whatever is in the source doesn't matter, allows us to actually make sure that we use as many paths as possible in the network. The same is true kind of for the destination IP address, but if you want to do that only on the destination side, you would have to assign a huge IP address block to every single router on your network. And IP space is actually fairly limited, and we're not doing this with IPv6 at the moment because the routers that we use are not supporting this with IPv6. So this is limited to V4 at the moment, unfortunately. So usually what we do is we assign a single IP address to one router, that is the destination address for the probes, and there's a rule then to decaps related traffic. I will show you later how to configure this on Juniper QFX and MX routers. And then you can configure edge loops and say, I want to have probes going from this machine to the loose hop core 1 FRA 1, and then from there to core 2 FRA 1, and then from there go to Düsseldorf, and then go back, basically. And in the configuration, you just define all your routers, and which is the decap IP address range for this, where the packets have to be sent. And then you just say, OK, I have a path that I want to have probed, and then you just specify which routers are to be used in which order. It also supports configurable type of service, or DSCP. So you can actually test if your quality of service setup is working properly, and if you're dropping only best effort traffic, or if you're also dropping AF4 or whatever, or X or EF traffic. The PPS rate is configurable, and is by default 25 packets per second. You can also attach a variable size payload to every packet. So if you want to see that packets of a certain size actually make it through the circuit, you can adjust that, which is probably quite handy if you have a layer 2 VPN from someone and they are telling you, yeah, you can use packets of, let's say, 9,000 bytes. If you want to always test if that's true, you can do that with this tool. Also, a measurement has a certain duration, which is quite small by default. It's 1 second. So what the tool does is it sends packets for 1 second. It counts how many packets are coming back. It calculates the minimum, average, and maximum RTT, and that is being exposed to Prometheus on /metrics. And it's actively probing, no matter if the Prometheus is actually scraping the target or not. So you should adjust the measurement duration with the scraping interval of Prometheus, so that every measurement is actually being scraped. Here's some TCP dump from a machine that is sending out the probes on our network. So you can see the first one goes to 10.25.0.255. There's a GRE header, and there's another IP packet that goes to 10.10.255, and then there's another IP header, and then there's UDP, and then there's IP address 10.200.144.2, and the port, and that's where the packet goes back, basically. Here's a graph from our Grafana that actually uses the Prometheus in the background, where we can see the packet loss, the round trip times, and the jitter, basically. This is a measurement between Leipzig and Frankfurt on our network, and it's fairly handy. So as I said, I wanted to show you how you can actually decapsulate the packets on your routers. In Juniper, often on QFX 5100 and 10,000 families, and on the Juniper MX, you can configure firewall rules that are actually matching a destination IP address or a range and a protocol, and there's an action then that is decapsulate GRE that just cuts off the first 24 bytes and forwards the inner packet based on the routing table. Simple as that. So the probing packet is actually not going through the routing engine. That's why you can send 1,000 or more PPS per second through the router and test if it works, and your control plane will not be suffering from that. You can also do that on Linux. You can configure an IP tunnel. I called it GRE decap here, and you only specify the local address. You don't say this is a. You don't specify that this is a tunnel interface to a certain other end. It's just open. No matter what source address is on the packet, it's being treated as a packet that arrived on the tunnel. So it decapsulates it and forwards the packet, as long as you enable IP forwarding, of course. And there's one other knob that you have to switch over, and that is accept local. Accept local means accept packets with local source addresses. In combination with suitable routing, this can be used to direct packets between two local interfaces over the wire and have them accepted properly. The default is false. So the thing is, you receive packets where your machine is actually also the source, and that is something that Linux doesn't like by default for whatever reason. But if you just switch it to one, it just takes the packets and it works. So let me talk a bit about experiences. First of all, a disclaimer, the code that I just published on GitHub is not exactly the version that I run inside the Xring at the moment. That's simply because the code that we use internally at the moment is not the, let's say, the nicest one that I ever wrote in my life. But the Matroska Prober is the nicer version. It's very close to it, and the internal version will be deprecated very soon. So all the features that are missing in the Matroska Prober at the moment will be there within a few weeks, I think. So how we are running this system, we are running it with a measurement duration of 1 second. And a packet rate of 1600 per router, sourced on 8 machines. So every machine is sending 200 PPS to every router. Mostly the paths that we specified is just one loose hop, so we just send it to the router on whatever path the routing table has at the moment, and then return on whatever path is the shortest to go back. But in order to test these paths that are usually not being used, like the backup paths, the convergence paths, we also have quite some paths with two hops. So from Leipzig, for example, I make sure that I go to the core one in Frankfurt and go to core two in order to make sure that this small link between the two core routers is actually being tested. The targets that we have is all our core routers, all of the Tor routers, and AWS. And AWS is actually quite interesting. What I did is I took an EC2 instance, and I did exactly this on the EC2 instance and started sending GRE packets through the EC2 instance to see how well the AWS network is actually working. And it's not as good as one might think. We had issues in summer actually sending packets in the middle, suddenly in the middle of the night, always at 1 a.m. and 7 minutes, for some reason, suddenly there was packet drops on multiple EC2 instances for a few seconds. So with this tool, I'm able to see that the black hole was there for 4 seconds. If you use something like SmokePing that has a measurement interval of multiple minutes, or just does it once and then sleeps for a while, you will probably not see the loss at all. You would not be able to say for 4 seconds it was 100% loss. You'd be able to say, okay, over 30 seconds it was 10, 15% loss or something like that. But with this tool, I can really say from this second to this second, no packets were going through. They were completely lost. Yeah, we tried to debug that, and of course we asked Amazon what is happening here, but actually we didn't find out. At some point it just stopped, and it started popping up at other times in the day then, and every now and then it just happens. And what we learned from this is actually we don't want to alert on every single packet that is being dropped. We tune for very aggressive alerts at the beginning to see how well it's actually working. After getting kicked out of my bed in the middle of the night, the third time or the fourth time, I decided to go for less aggressive alerting and just move that stuff maybe to tickets. If the black hole is there for, let's say, less than 10 seconds, there's no reason to get out of bed. It is pretty bad still, but you can deal with it next day anyways. So I start getting pages and then looking at it and, the black hole to AWS again in the middle of the night, just silence, go back to bed, which is a clear indicator that you're doing the alerting wrong anyways. So if all your alerting is non-action, you shouldn't send the alert to the pager anyways. And of course, in the Prometheus, the scraping interval is 1 second. This is a lot of data, so for every second, I have the round trip time, the average, the minimum, and the maximum, the packet loss, the probes sent, the probes received, and all those things. It's quite a lot of data. So we went for a pretty low retention time of 12 hours. So 12 hours after an event, the data is actually gone, which means in case that we have a serious issue, that requires a postmortem. We have to save the data pretty fast and make screenshots from our dashboards in order to know what exactly happened at what point in time. Yeah, so operational conclusion. We're doing this for a year now. And in general, it turned out to be a pretty good idea. The network is not suffering from it, and there's a few megabits of base traffic now, which can be confusing in cases when you drain a router and you're wondering why is there this 20, 30 megabits of traffic not going away? Yeah, because there's an explicit hop via this router, and as long as the router is reachable, the traffic is there. Yeah, as I said, don't tune too aggressively for alerting, especially if it's a part of a network where you can't do anything about it. If it's a vendor network like AWS or it's an L2 VPN that you're buying, you want to have the data, but you don't want to get kicked out of bed just because you have a hiccup of 5, 6, 7 seconds in the middle of the night and you can't do anything about it anyways. And it's definitely a great help for impact analysis in postmortems and also in other conditions where you have fiber cuts and stuff, and you always ask yourself, so what is the impact? How long am I losing the packets when the excavator cuts my fiber? And you get a pretty good idea how well your network is actually doing. So now back to the title, but what about MPLS that I mentioned in the title? One could also do all this with MPLS. Our internal version of the Matroska Prober allows us to stack MPLS packets into GRE in order to actually also send packets to outside of our network to hosts that are not decapsulating our GRE packets where we don't have control. So let's say you have a peering, and I can just stick a label on top of the GRE, and the label is configured on the router to send it out to a certain peer on some internet exchange, and I can send out the packet and see if it comes back. Actually black box monitor a peering interface. But of course, you should not do that with a destination prefix that is not announced over the circuit. Wouldn't be too nice. I'm going to implement this in the open source version as well. But I'm also going for a completely other thing, that is to actually implement an ISIS table receiver, basically, for ISIS segment routing. And then calculate all possible paths in a network, or at least as many paths as possible so that everything is covered, but without creating too much of complexity. And that automatically tests all your circuits in the SR domain without needing any configuration. So we self-adopting to your network. So if you just add a new router, you don't need to change the config. It's pretty low maintenance. And it gives you also a great idea if your forwarding is actually working and if your segment routing is working especially. But that's probably going to be in a different project. I'll probably use some of the software from here as a library, but I think the binary, at least the binary, will be a different one because the use case is a bit different. Yeah, so thank you for your attention. If you have questions, I think we have some time now. There's 6 minutes left. And you can find the software on github.com/xring-matroska-prober. And if you'd like to contribute Go code, you're very welcome.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Benedict from DKIX. My question is, when you stack all the GRE labels on top of each other and you probe a path with more than two routers in it, I understood it the way that you cannot determine the router where the de-encapsulation failed. What you get in the end is you're not seeing the UDP packet, and then you know that the entire path is not working, but you cannot isolate the router where it's failing, correct?
Correct, but if you take the picture that I had, and you're sending packets to one router on the direct path and to the other router on the direct path, and they both work, and one time you go to the one router and then indirectly to the other router and that fails, then you actually know that the problem's between the two routers.
Okay, but you have to deduce that information in a second step.
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
You have to do it yourself for now.
Okay, further questions?
Thank you. If you're pinging your routers directly, as I understand, with more than 1,000 packets per second, mm-hmm. don't you usually hit any ICP thresholds on the routers?
Well, the decapsulation of the packets happens in the ASIC. So we're not going through the routing engine or supervisor engine at all.
Okay, so what IP address do you ping? Is it an IP address that is configured on the router?
Yes. So we are adding another prefix to be sourced into the BGP domain by the router, and that IP address or range is then configured in a firewall rule on every port to other core routers to check if this is GRE, and if it is, then decapsulate the packet.
You said that you have got a small retention time configured in your Prometheus. Do you have an own Prometheus just for this
yes.
time? Okay. And how much data do you usually gather within these 12 hours?
Ooh, I can't tell you right now. I have to look it up, but I can tell you later if you like.
Okay.
Okay, any further questions?
What is the actual latency of the program itself? You're collecting the timestamps, but I guess the program itself is adding some latency. I haven't looked at it. Are you using DPDK or something like that, or is it just plain going to user space? That could significantly change the measurement what you're getting.
So the program works with regular raw sockets on top of whatever operating system you have. So it's pure user space implementation. Of course, there's some latency. I also, from right from the machine where the prober runs, I'm probing the next hop, so the very next Tor switch, basically. And the latency there is somewhere in the range of nanoseconds. So if you're probing a wide area network, it's not relevant.
Okay, further questions?
Holger Zuliger, Vodafone. My gut feeling is that this forwarding path based on the hardware architecture of Juniper. So do you have some experience with other vendors, how they handle these kind of traffics?
It definitely also works with Arista devices. I didn't test it with Cisco because I don't have access to any of those. So I'm happy to hear what anyone who tests this on other platforms, just drop me an email, let me know if it works or not. Would be cool to hear that.
Okay, any further questions?
Uh, how do you prevent other people from using your GRE tunnels for fun and profit?
Well, the destination addresses are IFC 1918s, and from the outside world, they don't make it into our network, and internally, we trust each other.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, then thank you very much.